Good morning. It's Friday, May 30th, and you're tuned into 88.5 KRFY. This is Panhandle Community Radio. It's North Idaho News of the Week, our weekly roundup of the top stories in our area. My name is Jack Peterson, and I'm here with Chris Bessler. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jack. How you doing?
I'm doing very well.
Yeah, you put in some later nights here this week as we were doing our fun drive.
Fun drive is, but it's a fun time.
Fun drive.
I'm a little tired, but I am. I'm excited. It has been a fun series of nights here. The fun drive. Yes. Eric Welch is here as well from the Bonner County Daily Bee. That's where I'll leave it for now. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning.
nice to have you with us. To wrap up the news this week, I'll start with my headlines here. Okay, currently the lake is at 2,059.5 feet as measured at Hope. The full is 2,062.5, so we're just 3 feet short of the full summer pool. And there is a meeting of the Lakes Commission, or a public meeting on Tuesday at the Priest River Event Center. Agenda items include the ongoing river and lake projects, as well as progress on the Albany Falls Dam, among other topics. Presentations from the Idaho Department of Water Resources, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Avista, Idaho Department of Fish and Game, University of Idaho, Priest River Urban Renewal Agency, etc. You have to go in person. There won't be an online option or a recording available of the event if you want to attend. The lake level is expected to come up as forecast originally, and they think it will be full in early June. I think we're only like a week or so away from full summer pool. Okay, there was a fire in Laclede on Manly Creek Road. Selkirk Fire responded along with county and state offices, and 47 firefighters total contained the fire to 7 acres as of the most recent report. This comes just a week after the levy elections, where the local fire districts, for by and large, failed to pass their supplemental or permanent levies to raise taxes and raise funds. Fire Chief Jeff Armstrong issued a statement in response to those levy failures, and I can read from that actually in just a minute. The statement outlines kind of the cuts that he expects the departments are going to have to make to continue to meet their budget. Let's see. Bonner County will cease their maintenance of Dog Beach. Dog Beach, of course, here in Sandpoint, just down the road from downtown Sandpoint, down a short walking trail, and on the Long Bridge Trail. That land is owned, it turns out, by the Idaho Transportation Department. I'm not sure if anyone knew that, but ITD owns the land, but Burlington Northern Santa Fe, the railroad, controls the land as a right-of-way. Bonner County has been maintaining that land for public use for some years at some taxpayer expense, and no agreement was in place. They offered to, the county offered to continue to maintain it for free and put a written agreement in place. BNSF apparently responded offered them a lease, but that the county would have to pay to lease the land in order to continue to maintain it. So the county, as of the most recent county meeting, the county will cease maintaining Dog Beach, and I don't know actually if the public will continue to be allowed access to Dog Beach, but it won't be maintained. Mm-hmm. Timberline Helicopters broke ground on a new $13 million expansion at Sandpoint Airport for repairs, manufacturing parts, and assembly and disassembly of helicopters. So the aircraft, aerospace sector in Sandpoint continues to expand with that new development. Here in the city of Sandpoint, the lifeguard stands have been taken down at City Beach as the third summer without lifeguards at the beach begins. The city of Sandpoint this weekend, in a little positive news, is going to distribute free trees at the Sandpoint Farmers Market. We're coming up on Arbor Day, and yes, it will be free trees at the Sandpoint Farmers Market. I think they have 100 large trees that they're going to give away. City personnel and community members met to discuss options on May 28th as the James E. Russell Center costs continue to exceed its revenue. And Eric Welch has the full detailed report on that. And I think we can start by talking about that. Actually, before turning to that, I'll read a few lines out of Chief Armstrong's response to the levy failure. He begins by saying the ballots have been counted and the fire levies were not passed by the voters. He says, I respect their decision. The majority of the voters decided this was not the right option for us. I respect their decision and can accept the results, knowing I did my best to share with the community our challenges and future financial shortfalls. We are committed to defining our future and continuing to operate in the best manner possible with the resources we have. Some of the highlights here, he mentions that in the Sagal Fire District, his recommendation will be to remove the paid staffing from the Kerrywood Fire Station by June 1st, by this Sunday, which will save the district a substantial amount in overtime and personnel costs. The funds will be shifted immediately to the maintenance of the aging fleet, fire station repairs, and equipment replacement. In the West Side Fire District, they will continue to operate with one full-time firefighter per day and work towards creative solutions to make operations as safe and effective as possible. In the North Side Fire District, they will not be able to provide staffing at the Samuels Fire Station or retain the grant firefighter positions beyond the term of the grant. He will be looking for creative ways to address personnel costs. The city of Ponderé is in the Northside Fire District, and there's some large commercial buildings there and significant community risk. So he highlights that and goes into further detail. But it seems like a disappointing result of the levies for Fire Chief Armstrong. And hopefully we can get him on these airwaves to comment further. But that was his response. Looks like some staffing changes to be expected here in the local fire districts.
Anything in the statement or anything you gleaned from the fire chief indicating they're going to go for another try, maybe a smaller levy?
Yes. Looks like he's going to be... I think that they will, if I read that correctly, but I don't know exactly when that will be. And he doesn't address the size of the levy that they'll go for, but I expect this was probably not the last time that you'll see the fire districts try to pass a levy. Back to city business. Eric Welch has been the reporter. They covered the city beat for about a year. Is that right, city?
That's right.
City? Yep. Is that right? You've been on the city beat, Eric, for about a year. And the James E. Russell Sports Center has been for that full year has been kind of been making front page news on and off, hasn't it?
Yeah. And it's been coming up pretty soon on the 6-month anniversary, I guess, of when that facility really opened its doors for the first time. So, yeah, between the construction and the operation of that, that's been definitely a big thing going on in the last year.
Yeah. The report that, as the discussion began, I guess, at the James E. Russell Sports Center, the staff reports that they expect the revenue to be about $100,000 short of expenses by the end of the first year. So that's a one-year shortfall of $100,000. Is that about right?
Yeah.
Okay. A pretty substantial chunk of change in a town this size.
Yeah. And it was I guess I'll give a little bit of context just for maybe people who aren't familiar with this, the construction of this James E. Russell Sports Center, which is a tennis and pickleball facility out in Traverse Park here in the city of Sandpoint, was enabled by a $7.5 million donation that was offered by the Russell family to essentially allow this big facility to be created without spending any taxpayer dollars. And since then, you know, I guess leading up to the opening, city staff had said that they were really aiming for user fees, you know, be that memberships or one-time use, the people who are using the facility, revenue from that to cover the costs of maintaining and operating this, so that it's not coming from taxpayer dollars, but rather from the people who are playing there. And so far that hasn't been the case. Like Jack said, projecting for the first year of operation about $100,000 short of covering those costs. And so that at this sort of 6 month anniversary had the city staff invite about 100 people to, I should say they invited everybody, but about 100 people showed up to the center on Wednesday and had a little workshop to sort of discuss what the future of that facility would look like.
100 people at a Wednesday workshop is a pretty well-attended meeting for City of Sandpoint kind of civic events, I would say. So it's getting a good amount of attention. You write here that Welker did think that costs this year are probably higher than the average year costs. I mean, with the startup of the building is going to be a more expensive year than the average.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Still, the cost of operation, $222,858 are the total cost just to operate that building for the year, apparently. Did he break down at all where does that money go? Is that I mean it's a huge facility. Is it utilities costs or
mostly
staffing?
Staff, I think.
Yeah.
But utilities are probably a pretty substantial piece of that.
Yeah, Chris is right. It's staff is number one. Mm-hmm. Between, you know, the people who are there, you know, working the desk and helping make sure that facility is taken care of, plus the administrative side of it. Staff is, I believe you said, by far the biggest cost associated with it. And then number two is the power bill, electricity bill for heating, AC, lights, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. What do they say is what do they say they're going to try to change, you know, moving forward? Did he present any options for what you know, how they intend to make up for this shortfall?
Yeah, I think
then that is the plan, right? I mean, they want this facility to be self-sustaining. It's not going to be like the Parks Department.
That's actually a question.
Yeah,
right. We do have a city rec department that is supported by taxpayer revenues.
Right.
And yeah, have had that for many many years. And it pays for our parks and the recreation programming. So that's a question that city residents are going to have to weigh in on in some fashion. Is, mm-hmm. Yeah, we want to spend part of our city tax on these recreation programs.
Right.
So that would be the first option, I suppose, that the city does see this as a part of their recreation expenditure. But to get back to the idea that it might be self-sustaining, he did lay out a couple other ideas, I believe.
Yeah. That first option, like Chris said, is just to stay the course, essentially, mm-hmm. You know, keep going the way it is and just eat that deficit using our recreation fund dollars. And, you know, the city staff kind of mentioned that would probably come at the expense of, you know, or at the cost of things like adult and youth sports leagues that are run by the city, some other courses or classes that are offered through the recreation department. You know, directing funds toward the sports center would probably take away opportunities to do those sorts of things. But that is one option, is to just continue to cover the deficit. Another option that he brought up was to, you know, really shrink down hours quite a bit, because staffing is the number one cost at this facility. By reducing the hours and the number of, you know, staff hours that you're having to pay, that would bring down costs a lot. Jason Welker did mention that that would probably also come with, you know, a reduction in membership revenue, because if you're open for a shorter amount of time, there's going to be fewer opportunities to play. And so by shrinking those hours, you might not actually save as much money when you're adding up the cost and the revenue as you might think you would.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's not like a city park in that, yeah, somebody has to be there to unlock the doors, and then somebody has to actually stay there at the desk while the facility is in use, and then turn off the lights at the end of the day. As opposed to, yes, the parks, which are just pretty much open 24/7, even though they're not staffed all the time. So interesting. Any other like kind of creative solutions? I know there's right now it's primarily a pickleball and tennis facility, but we've seen some other sports kind of get their
tiny bit of use, lacrosse got in there. But
fly fishing too, they did a little. Oh, yeah. I heard they did some casting practice in there.
You know, the bigger user groups we have here in town would be basketball and volleyball, both of which are hurting for space indoors during the winter particularly, and of course spring sports that like soccer or baseball, where the kids could get in and use that facility to get practice in prior to their seasons. So there's a whole range of things that the facility could be used for other than just these two court sports.
Yeah, and that was something that was certainly brought up as another option, was to look into investing in some mixed-use court surfaces that could actually be installed, you know, either temporarily or semi-temporarily on top of those tennis and pickleball courts. I think the ones that were presented were kind of a hardwood surface for basketball and volleyball, plus an artificial turf surface where you could play soccer, do some baseball training, that sort of thing. And, you know, by installing some of those, of course, they would come with a cost to purchase those materials. And it would also occupy some of the space that's currently available for tennis and pickleball players. But, Jason Welker estimated that that could bring in some additional revenue by, you know, leasing time on those surfaces to a lot of our youth sports groups or even adult sports groups during the wintertime, particularly when, like you said, Chris, there's a lot of demand for that kind of thing.
And then I think one option was discussed to just turn it over to some kind of nonprofit organization to operate it.
Yeah, that was a discussion possibly with the U.S. Tennis Association. They have a Pacific Northwest chapter that I guess has in some other municipally owned facilities like the Russell Center has sort of taken over operations and offered, you know, their whole slew of programming that they have and, you know, essentially partnered with these cities to sort of relieve them of some of the burden of having to, yeah, I guess, operate or organize, you know, the activities at these facilities. And as to what that would look like for the budget or for revenue and costs, I think that's still kind of unclear if that would, you know, completely shift all of the cost burden away from the city or even bring in revenue for the city or what would happen exactly. But that was kind of the fourth major option, I should say, that was discussed at the workshop.
Let's see. He did mention you note here in your piece that that additional programming that such an organization might provide usually comes with like an additional cost. So it reduces the cost to the city, but to the actual user doesn't necessarily mean costs are going to go down. It may in fact go up if a different organization were to take over management of the facility.
That's what it seemed like. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess next steps, what's next, on the agenda for the Russell Sports Center? Is there, what's the next meeting? What are the next, you know, who gets to make the next move? And are there other, public events scheduled, that folks can attend?
Yeah, not any other public events specifically for, this sort of topic that I've heard about, at least so far. Mm-hmm. It's going to be up to Sandpoint City Council if any major changes happen, you know, regarding something like buying some new turf surfaces and kind of converting a portion of the facility for mixed use or partnership with an outside organization. That would have to come through city council. And the city sort of mentioned that this Wednesday workshop was really just an opportunity to gather input from all those, you know, members of the public who came out to present this information from the city rec department and sort of consider these options. So there really was no decision that was reached on Wednesday. Mayor Grimm mentioned that he's sort of going to review the outcomes of that workshop and put together a proposal to bring to city council in the coming months, he said. So it's likely that this kind of might continue to operate as it has for at least a little while longer. And then we'll see what the council, I guess, sees is best for everybody in Sandpoint.
My last question, I guess, is in summation, what was your take on of the 100 people there? You know, was there any kind of consensus opinion of any kind, or everybody had their own ideas of what's best?
Well, sort of the two dominant opinions were, number one would be to, you know, maintain this facility as a racket sports center, as a tennis and pickleball center. I thought one kind of an astute comment that somebody in the public made was that it takes time, I think, sometimes for the sports to grow and to, you know, kind of cultivate that community, and that maybe in the first 6 months of this big facility being there, it might not, you know, attract all of the traffic that it's going to in the long run. And then the other perspective that was presented by a number of people was that a lot of youth sports and adult sports, a lot of athletics in the community could really use extra indoor space. And there were people representing basketball, soccer, baseball, who all said we would be willing to lease space in this facility if this were to be turned over. But actually, between these two perspectives, there was something that they both sort of agreed on, and that was that a facility alone, you know, no matter what the facility looks like or how nice or new or shiny it is, isn't really what makes or breaks the recreation experience. It's more about the programs, the coaching, the instruction within the facility. Essentially, somebody said something to the effect of, you know, if you just let them come in and out, they may or may not come back. But if you make sure that they're, you know, really learning, they're really having a good time, they're enjoying themselves, you know, that sort of thing, while they're there, that's what's really going to keep them there. And so both sides, or I should say pretty much all of the people who spoke, really spoke to the importance of programming, of enrichment, and of kind of these activities that could take place regardless of what the Russell Center is used for.
That's interesting. I think we've probably dwelled on the subject enough. We could keep going on.
Well, there's another recreation oriented topic. So the City Beach is has removed the lifeguard stands.
Yeah.
Did you cover that story?
Yeah. And I believe that they're in the process of removing it. Last time I was down there, at least I saw that there's still at least some of the lifeguard stands up there. But everything that I've heard is that it's due to liability concerns. So we haven't had lifeguards there for a while, but we have these lifeguard stands, even though they have a sign that says
no
something to the effect.
On duty.
Yeah, exactly. There was, Mayor Grimm, who said he was the one who kind of spearheaded this effort to get them taken down, said that even with that sign, there still could be some liability concerns about people who would get injured.
That making an assumption, oh, I see a lifeguard stand, there are lifeguards here, I can let my kid go swim and not worry about it. For instance, I think that's the concern. And the problem here, it really wasn't the funding. It was the fact they just couldn't find kids to be lifeguards anymore. Am I gleaning that properly?
Yeah, I believe so. I think that there was some discussion among counselors earlier this spring when city staff were talking about trying to recruit lifeguards. And there was some discussion about, you know, whether the wages that they were offering were high enough to attract the candidates that were needed. Unfortunately, off the top of my head, I can't recall what the salary or wages that they were offering, but
I think I saw like at $14.50 was what the hourly was going to be, and this is for, you know, kids that are now making $17 or $18 at fast food places, I guess. That's been cited as a problem in getting kids. That what really happened, I think, was during COVID when these programs stopped. They just never came back. And it's not just Sandpoint, but other cities have had trouble getting their lifeguard programs going again because they're not being able to find the young people that in the past have been their lifeguard corps, if you will. So that's a interesting development. Hopefully, I don't know if you know this, Eric, are they keeping the structure so they can come back someday if they get that going again?
I'm not sure, to be honest with you. You know, you would love to see, of course, I think, this all return and the structures be kept in a shed somewhere, but I really don't know the answer to that.
Or store them in the Russell Center. That's okay. I was going to say they originally said $14.50 according to this piece. They did increase the rate to $16, but still short of kind of the going rate. Yeah. But I think. Yep. As you mentioned, it's the training.
If I was a kid, I'd probably be happier to get $16 an hour as a lifeguard than $17 or $18. Pushing burgers at a fast food joint.
I was thinking the same thing, but also, I mean, so a lifeguard, you do, at least in, you know, when I was growing up, it was sometimes part of school curriculum. You could take a lifeguard training class.
They have to take classes to get trained for it. So, and we have an active swimming community here. You think that they could work something up where they kind of graduate kids into the lifeguard program.
Right, yeah. If you're coming out of school at the end of May, beginning of June, and you have this certification as a lifeguard, chances are you're going to use it. But yeah, it's, I guess, as they mentioned, COVID-19 broke the pipeline, and it doesn't sound like they figured out how to fix it.
So we're about at the end of our time, but there is one bit of news, Eric, that you must reveal to our listeners.
Yeah, this is today, Friday, is my last day as a reporter at the Daily Bee, and also one of my last days in Sandpoint. I'm going to take a little time to travel and see some family and relatives across the West in the next couple of weeks. And this marks, about a year in Sandpoint and of a lot of good experiences, I think, particularly with all of the nonprofit organizations, charities, just kind of general selflessness in Sandpoint, I think is the number one thing that has stuck out to me in my time here is that I've been really impressed with all of the nonprofit, charity, community organizations across town. I think that's something that Sandpoint really gets right.
Mm-hmm. A lot of community spirit here. So will you stay in journalism when it's time to go back to work after goofing off on your travels here?
That remains to be seen. You know, I think that it's a really important thing for the community. It's a really important service try to offer that, to try to inform the community, for lack of a better word. And I think that I'll see what opportunities are presented to me, but that remains to be seen, Chris.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hey, you have a spot of freedom here, so enjoy that.
Where are you going to end up? You're leaving town? Is the rent the lease is up? And where do you think you'll find yourself at?
Do you leave town? On how many wheels?
Uh-huh. Well, in the short term, we'll be rolling out of town on two wheels on Sunday. I'm embarking on a 26-day, 1,000-mile bicycle journey.
Oh, cool.
Leaving right out of town here in Sandpoint, going up on a big loop up through British Columbia, down through Alberta and back into Sandpoint in late June. So that is something I've been looking forward to for a long time and something that I'm really glad I'm getting an opportunity to go out and do that.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of fun. I don't know. Outsider's perspective, I guess you already kind of gave it on the city of Sandpoint as you leave. You came and left, and we'll miss you, Eric.
Thanks for coming in and contributing here. It's been great, man. We appreciate bringing insights,
behind the headlines, if you will. Mm-hmm. And we really appreciate getting the local journalists in for that.
Yeah. Well, Eric Welch, thank you very much for everything this long time. Don't be a stranger if you find yourself passing through Sandpoint again. You know where the office is, where the studio is. Mm-hmm. And I guess we'll turn it over to Otto's Eclectic Mix. A little programming note here. I'll be back on in just a few minutes with Bernie, Wednesday morning's Bernie Moser. But we will be playing, I don't know what we're going to play. It'll be a battle of wills.
It's a bit of a continuation of the Fun Drive.
It is.
Yeah.
Fun Drive goes on. This would be really the last day. If you're looking to make a contribution, we will have, the phone lines will be open as soon as the microphone is closed here in just a few minutes.
And that phone number, Jack?
208-265-2992. We appreciate any contribution. Today is the last day that the phone lines will be open regularly for, and we'll have those membership sheets ready to fill out as soon as you make the phone ring. Of course, your donation is welcome at any time, but we really do appreciate it at this time. Makes it easier for us to budget. You can also go to KRFY.org or KRFY.org/donate. We'll take you right to the page. Tonight, we hope we see you all at the Idaho Poor Authority for our TAP takeover, which starts at 5 p.m. We will see you there. Utara Brewing is bringing over 4 kegs of beer, and this is a benefit for us, the community radio station.
Our challenge is to 4 kegs of beer. It's 4 clearly kegs. Set forth there, yeah.
That's right. What is that, 160? Yeah, so something like 600 beers will have to be poured.
So we need help, folks. Come and have some fun with us at the TAP takeover at the Poor Authority tonight.
Yeah, the music and fun and the all-important quilt raffle. The drawing is finally happening tonight. Mm-hmm. So come down and join us there. Okay. Once again, Eric, thanks so much for being here and for all you've done here in town this last year, and your good work at the Bonner County Daily Bee. We'll see you some other time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks, Jack.
Yeah.